Gives class, but his schedule is really packed up, so he's asked me to give class today. So this is Srimad Bhagavatam from Canto 7, Chapter 2, chapters entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om. evam gunayar evam guna brahmyamane manasya vikala puman yati tat samyatam bhadre yalingo lingavaniva evam guna brahmyamane manasya vikala puman yati tat samyatam bhadre yalingo lingavaniva evam guna brahmyamane manasya vikala puman yati tat samyatam bhadre yalingo lingavaniva. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the same way, O my gentle mother, when the mind is agitated by the movements of the modes of material nature, the living entity, although freed from all the different phases of subtle and gross bodies, thinks that he has changed from one condition to another. Sirhani Kashipu is speaking. I'll read it again. In the same way, O my gentle mother, when the mind is agitated by the movements of the modes of material nature, the living entity, although freed from all the different phases of the subtle and gross body, thinks that he has changed from one condition to another. Purport. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.84.13, Yashyatma Bhuti Kunape Tridatuke Swadi Kaladrishu Boma Ijidi Yatirta Bhuti Salileda Karhichit Janeshu Abideshu Sadeva Gokaraha. Translation. A human being who identifies the body made of three elements as the self, who considers the byproducts of the bodies to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of his birth worshipable, and who goes to a place of pilgrimage simply to bathe rather than to meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like a cow or an ass. Unquote. Although Hiranyakashipu was a great demon, he was not as foolish as the population of the modern world. Hiranyakashipu had clear knowledge of the spirit soul and the subtle and gross bodies. But now we are so degraded that everyone, including the exalted scientists, philosophers, and other leaders, is under the bodily conception of life, which is condemned in the Shastras. Sa eva gokaraha. Such persons are nothing but cows and asses. Hiranyakashipu advised his family members that although the gross body of his brother, Hiranyaksha, was dead, and they were aggrieved because of this, they should not lament for the great soul of Hiranyaksha, who had already attained his next destination. Atma, the spirit soul, is always unchanged, avikala pumam. We are spirit souls, but when carried away by mental activities, manodharma, we suffer from so-called material conditions of life. This generally happens to non-devotees. Harau avabhaktas tukuto mahagunan. Non-devotees may possess exalted material qualities, but because they are foolish, they have no good qualifications. The designations of the conditioned souls in the material world are all decorations of the dead body. The conditioned soul has no information of the spirit and his exalted existence beyond the effects of this material condition. So, Hiranyakashipu is giving very correct knowledge of the difference between the body and the soul. And trying to aggrieve his family members, headed by his mother, he's speaking very compassionately that one should not lament for the disappearance of the physical body. Because actually, the living entity is not the physical body, nor the subtle body. The living entity, ultimately, is pure spirit and is described very thoroughly throughout the scriptures that the spirit soul is Krishna's eternal part and parcel and has nothing to do with this material energy. Completely distinct. But when the living entity comes in contact with material energy, he's explained, he identifies the energy with the self and forgets his real identity and accepts a false identity. And based on that false identity, one is acting and reacting in contact with the material energy according to one's conditioned desires. In other words, according to how one wants to try to enjoy in contact with this material energy. And due to this, what we say, unnatural condition, which is a culmination of many, many lives, the soul becomes completely forgotten. So much so that one can, even about hearing about the soul, and one cannot understand anything about that. That's described in the Bhagavad Gita. Even those who hear about him can still not understand the nature of the spirit soul. So, this is due to the bodily conception of life. And as Srila Prabhupada is pointing out in this purport, and he's comparing Hiranyakashipu with today's modern scientists, philosophers, philanthropists. In other words, those who are expected to lead society. He's explaining that here's a demon, a big demon. He had subjugated practically all of existence in the material world, all the way up to the throne of King Indra. And the only realm of the heavenly levels he didn't touch was Brahmaloka. Of course, beyond that, Shivaloka. But practically the entire material energy was somehow under his control. At least he had thought like that. But he's speaking correct philosophical and spiritual knowledge, knowing the difference between the body and the soul. It's amazing because at the same time, he's attached to the bodily concept of life. Although he's speaking distinctly between these two very clear aspects of knowledge, the material energy, the spiritual energy, still he has no desire to understand the benefits of the spiritual energy. He's simply attached to the material energy, but he understands the difference. But Prabhupada compares him to today's modern scientists and others who are leaders within society as the society is even less knowledgeable today of these, what we say, essential factors of existence, which are the basis of all life. It says that the human form of life begins when one takes up the process of spiritual life. And the basic principle of spiritual life is to know, at least theoretically, that I'm not this body. I'm not this body. And I'm not this mind either. Some people think, oh yeah, I'm not this body. But we identify with the thoughts, the desires, and the what comes in contact with our mind. That also is another form of illusion or maya. The living entity is eternally Krishna's part and parcel. And the process of bhakti is the means to get out of it. Here, Prabhupada quotes this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Very important verse. What is the bodily conception of life? One who thinks that there are byproducts of this body, such as children, family members, etc., are my kinsmen. I'm born in a certain land, and therefore I identify with the body of that land. Sometimes I fight others who have a different birth and who are representing another country simply for the sense gratification of some national interest. Yes, you see today, there's so many wars going on, and people have this, what we say, natural, I don't know if it's called natural, but at least continuous animosity to others who have a different bodily designation. When you think about it, I mean, when you think about it really carefully, you realize this is foolishness. Devotees can understand this. But people are so much entrenched in this bodily conception of life that the ignorance and illusion that comes from that is one is ready to kill on the basis of complete foolishness. Complete foolishness. And people go to places of pilgrimage. So here's some credit given to those who see the advantages of places of pilgrimage. Why? Not to learn transcendental knowledge, not to change their life, but to simply take a bath. I bathed in this place. I went to, you know, Rishikesh or this place. And therefore, I've gotten some spiritual merit. Yes, that's true. But the real spiritual merit is to associate with those who can give you the understanding, both by their association and by their words, how to get out of this material entanglement. How to get out of this material entanglement, which is the basis of all success in life. If one practices any form of spirituality, but does not come to the understanding of devotional service, then ultimately one's progress is simply shrama evili kevalo. It's a useless waste of time. So here, in today's world, look at the world today. So much emphasis on communications, so much emphasis on accumulation of knowledge. Look at the universities and forms of think tanks and people doing more and more research about different aspects of existence, but hardly any of it's even touching the essential principle of existence, and that is the difference between the body and the soul, which is the basis of the difference between happiness and suffering. So what is modern civilization? As Prabhupada says here, the designations of the conditioned soul and the material are simply decorations of a dead body. The more one is successful on the bodily conception of life, the more one enters into the realm of ignorance. At least if they have that understanding that this success is the goal of life. The more they enter into that realm of ignorance. So ignorance is compounded by more and more achievements in the material world. So some of you might be thinking, I'm going to school. I'm a student. I'm learning different various forms of trades and other subject matters. That's okay, but that's not the goal of life. Nor can it bring one real happiness and success in life. The mind, here, in the translation, it says that the mind, in association with the material energy, identifies with various shiftings of that material energy. Whatever we are experiencing, due to the contact of the mind and the senses with the material energy, we identify that as reality. But that's simply the mind and senses in contact with the material energy. But the living entity is not the mind and senses. And that's the reality. So it's the conditioned mind that brings one in contact with the material energy and brings one deeper in contact with the illusions that come with identification with the mind and body. So Krishna very carefully and systematically in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita explains how to get out of this material energy by the process of using the mind. Udared atmanatmanam atmanam avasadayat atmaiva ripo atmanam atmaiva bandhur atmanam. That one should elevate themselves by the mind and not degrade herself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. When Hiranyakashipu was challenging his son Prahlad Maharaj, when Prahlad Maharaj was speaking various forms of philosophical knowledge to try to help his deluded father, Prahlad Maharaj was concerned about the spiritual welfare of his father. Although his father was a big demon and was trying to, in so many ways, kill him, still, as a compassionate Vaishnav, he wanted to educate his father. So he spoke. His father became more and more angry, more like it's described as a snake is deadly, but when someone steps on the snake, then the snake becomes more angry and more deadly. So he was like a snake being stepped on. And his poison became so. And finally he said, "You're siding with my enemy, Lord Vishnu. He's my enemy. He's killed my brother. He's my enemy, my avowed enemy. He's my only enemy." And Prahlad Maharaj very nicely, very sweetly, and very clearly said, "My dear father, your only enemy is your mind." The mind accepts and rejects based on sankalpa vikalpa, whatever is pleasing. I like it, I don't like it. And then tomorrow I like this, what I didn't like yesterday, and I don't like what I liked the day before. And the mind is back and forth, accepting or rejecting, based on what's pleasing to the senses and the mind, like that. Manodharma, on the platform of the mind. So Krishna says in the next verse that if one doesn't control the mind, then the mind is the greatest enemy. And one who does, the same mind becomes one's best friend. So Prahlad Maharaj is speaking the same philosophy to his father and also to his teachers in the school of Sandipani Muni when they tried to teach him politics, when they tried to teach him the importance of making discrimination between enemies and friends, friends and enemies. Prahlad Maharaj couldn't accept anything because he was a Vaishnava. He had clear spiritual knowledge. He simply said this idea of friends and enemies is some mental concoction, that's all. We make friends and enemies based on what we want to achieve in our life, and those who are support that, they're our friends, and others who are against that, they're our enemies. Friends and enemies. Yes. Prahlad Maharaj was speaking very clear on the difference between how the conditioned mind is accepting things in relationship to its own selfish desires. And so he's making this clear distinction between friends and enemies. So back to the point that Krishna explains in that when the mind is engaged or controlled, in the next verse, Krishna explains that When the mind is completely controlled, the super soul is already reached. And then happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, heat and cold are all the same. Now, how is it possible that the dualities of material energy, which are so distinct and are so much prevalent in this world, can be the same? How can happiness and distress be the same? Prabhupada said, this is the world of duality. It's all a world of mental concoction. Prabhupada said, you're walking on the street and you're thinking, oh, this street is nice. And somebody else is walking and thinking it's not nice. So who's right? I remember in my own personal life, I had an experience which gave me a clear understanding of the philosophy. It was last December. I was in one very, very big city in America known as Denver, Colorado. Maybe some of you heard of it. And it's an area of the country where they have snow during the wintertime, a lot of snow. Now, Denver's a big city. There are millions and millions of people there. Now, I was there, and it started to snow. And it snowed, and snowed, and snowed. And really, really snowed. So much so, the whole city stopped. All the shops were closed. All the schools were closed. The airport was completely closed. Thousands of planes, their flights were canceled in and out of Denver. Millions and millions of dollars were lost. And everyone, the papers were saying, this is so bad. We're losing so much money, so many things are not happening that should happen. But then again, there was another sector of that area, because this is an area where there's a lot of ski slopes. And so the ski slope people say, this is great. This is fantastic. Our business isn't going to increase. This is what we really want, a lot of snow. This is victory. Wow. So here's a good example. So was it good or bad? It depends on your perception. So therefore, Prabhupada makes this clear distinction, many of you talk, that verse spoken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami. He says, some people say this is good, and some people say this is bad. But I say it's all mental concoction. Why? Because in this material world, good and bad are given according to one's perception or desires. I like this. He doesn't like this. I was thinking, I couldn't get out of the city. I was stuck there. And I was supposed to go to another city for the first time. I was supposed to go and do this preaching to this other group of devotees, which I had never met. And I planned this for 8 months. I was planning to go to this place. I mean, really, really was thinking, you know, first time, I want to go, but I couldn't go. And I was thinking, wow, but now I can read and chant more. And I stayed there four or five extra days. I did more reading, more chanting, and I was a little unhappy that I couldn't go, but after a while, I just realized, yeah, Krishna gave me some more times for reading and chanting and doing other things. A devotee is somewhat he understands that in any situation, whether good or bad, apparently by material conditions, one can somehow or other use the mind in such a way that one can move forward in the process of devotional service. A devotee is not dependent on external conditions. Sometimes with neophyte devotees, those who first come in contact with Krishna consciousness, so many things have to be in place in order to practice devotional service properly. And that is part of the process. But as we practice the process and become more and more, when we say fixed in chanting our rounds and associate with devotees and hearing and reading and we realize that we have to be dependent on whatever Krishna gives us. So a devotee is not dependent on any the natural course of events, which may or may not be pleasing or unpleasing according to the situation. So that's the nature of the mind. The mind is always making all these various forms of calculations based on what I like and what I don't like, and what is pleasing, what is like that. We make a distinction in our devotional life, what is beneficial and what is not beneficial. But as we understand, what is not beneficial for a devotee? The only thing that is not beneficial for a devotee is to act contrary to the instructions of the spiritual master. That is the only principle that one should very carefully follow, is to follow carefully the instructions of the spiritual master and act independently. Then, even if things apparently don't come according to one's proposed desires or plans, then that's Krishna's mercy. But if we act outside of the instructions of the spiritual master, then what happens is also good, but as a means for bringing us back. I'll give you an example. In the very beginning days of the Krishna conscious movement in New York City, the devotees were very new. This was back in 1966. And Prabhupada had left the East Coast and he was going to the West Coast to open up centers in San Francisco and also Santa Fe. Later he went to Los Angeles. And devotees were looking for a new place in New York. The building, 26 Second Avenue, was there, but they wanted another place. And Prabhupada was behind the idea. So they came in contact with one businessman who was representing a particular owner of a building. Now this man, he liked the devotees, apparently, or it seemed like, and he was arranging for the devotees to get this building. But Prabhupada didn't trust him. He could see something within the man's character that wasn't right. Didn't trust him. So the man was saying, you know, you guys are doing nice work, and I really like you, and there's other people who are bidding on this building, but I'm going to make sure you guys get it. That was his concern, apparently. But Prabhupada said, don't give him any money until the contract is signed. Don't give him any money until the contract is signed. So the man came one day after Prabhupada had left and went to Los Angeles. He came to the devotees. He said, there's another group that wants this building, and I want you to have it so I can save it for you. Give me $5,000 down payment. This was before the contract was signed. And this will guarantee that you'll get the building. Now Prabhupada said, don't give him any money. That was Prabhupada's instruction. No matter what he says, don't give him any money until the contract is signed. So the devotees thought, wow, you know, we really want this building. And Prabhupada also. And they simply thought, well, maybe Prabhupada, you know, I don't know what they were thinking, but they didn't listen to Prabhupada. They gave him $5,000. The same day they called, Prabhupada said, we gave Mr. Price, his name was Mr. Price, $5,000. Prabhupada said, immediately go to the bank, stop payment on the check. They went to the bank, the check was already cashed. They went to his office was cleaned out, he was gone. Now, $5,000 in those days is about $50,000 today. I mean, that's how much the value of the dollar has decreased. That was a lot of money 40 years ago. So it was a great loss. So Prabhupada came back to New York. Now, the devotees on the phone were saying, well, Prabhupada, because they had heard Prabhupada preach that everything happens is Krishna's mercy. So they said to Prabhupada, this is Krishna's mercy. We lost the money. It was Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada said, no, it's your stupidity. Not Krishna's mercy. I told you what Krishna's mercy is. This is Krishna's mercy. You don't give him the money. That's when you follow that, then the mercy is coming accordingly. But the devotees were thinking, you know. So I don't know what they were thinking. Somehow they acted independently. But anyway, Prabhupada went back to New York and he was able to retrieve $2,000 of the money somehow. Prabhupada did it by himself. But so we learned from that incident that, you know, that everything that happens to a devotee when he follows the instructions of the spiritual master is perfect. It's perfect. And of course, even if we don't follow the instructions and we act independently, we get a kind of mercy that is a little bit like a kick. It's also, in one sense, if you put it within the context that everything is under the control of either the material or spiritual energy, and Krishna, through the external energy, is somehow or other punishing by giving the reactions of that activity in such a way that the devotee will realize that this is wrong, that I made a mistake, that I'm acting improperly, like that. And so the nature of the mind is to act according to one's conditioned understanding. Even in Krishna consciousness, we see Prabhupada someone was talking to Prabhupada on one morning walk lecture. This was also in Denver in 1975. And he was saying, Prabhupada, when you become Krishna conscious, do you see things differently? I mean, does your whole vision of the external environment become like, you know, completely different? Prabhupada said, you follow the process. But he actually agreed. He said, yes, it's a transformation of consciousness. One sees, actually, according to the level of their purification of consciousness. And Prabhupada said, yes, you do see things. And what is the major distinction of consciousness that is between the spiritual and the material? We might make a distinction between what is actually spiritual and what is actually material in the divisions of those two ways of thinking. And that is that one sees everything in relationship to oneself, that's material. And one sees everything in relationship to Krishna, that is spiritual. That is the difference. That is the foundation. And therefore, the devotee uses the mind, although his mind may not be fully purified from all material desires, still he uses the mind, she uses the mind in such a way as to take what Krishna has given, whatever it may be, and use that in the service of Krishna. And that way, the mind becomes purified from all its material desire. Prabhupada says, you want to dress nicely. You want to look nicely. You know, sometimes people like to dress up. I remember when I was in the preaching center in America, you meet all kinds of people coming to preaching centers. I mean, really amazing, especially in America. So this one young man, he would come every day with a different colorful set of outfits on. And he would make his own clothes. He had all kinds of patterns and hairstyles and kind of, he would look really like some kind of actor on a dramatic stage or something. Every day he would come with a different outfit. And he was very proud of his ways of dressing. And we would say, yes, you look very nice. But I used to think, you know, this is useless, you know. But in order to encourage him, you know, I would always say, oh, yes, you're very artistic. You had a nice way to dress and so many nice things. So people like to dress nice. But what is that? That's a conception of trying to make this body attractive to others in order to enjoy some type of subtle or gross sense gratification. Basically, that's what it is. But Prabhupada says if you dress Krishna nice, or you appreciate those who are dressing Krishna very nice, you lose your attraction to dress yourself nicely for sense gratification like that. You want to eat nice foods? Offer nice foods to Krishna in devotion and take the remnants, and devotees are satisfied. Those Prabhupada used that example also. We want to eat so many nice foods, offer them to Krishna and take the remnants. And because Krishna is satisfied by the devotion, the devotee also becomes satisfied simply by accepting whatever Krishna gives in return. So the mind becomes purified by engaging the mind in devotional service of the Lord. That is the essential principle here. Otherwise, the mind, what is the nature of the conditioned mind? It's never satisfied. Never satisfied. The conditioned mind is always dissatisfied. No matter what you do or what you give it or how much it is engaged in sense gratification, it's not satisfied. Last night we were talking. I was talking to Mahamuni Prabhu and one other devotee. We were talking, Radhakun Prabhu, how, you know, so many songs that we grew up with were pretty much expressions of dissatisfaction. Can't get no satisfaction. I try and I try and I try and I keep trying and I try a different way and I still can't get no satisfaction. And there are other songs. I won't go into too many of the artists because I don't know if you find this very much interesting. But actually, a lot of the songs were like that. No satisfaction. Although we could see that those who were singing, they had so much, they had power, they had fame, they had money, they had facilities for enjoyment. Still, no satisfaction. That's the nature of the conditioned mind. Always dissatisfied. So Prabhupada says, how do you make the mind satisfied? Engage it in devotional service. When the mind is engaged in devotional service, sometimes even when it's engaged in devotional service, there's still apparently some dissatisfaction, or the mind is not happy. Why? Because the mind is not satisfied simply by doing the service. When we accept the mind that, well, I'm engaged in devotional service, but in the back of the mind is thinking, there should be something else here for me. And I just can't wait till I get to the point where I can fulfill these other desires, although I'm engaged in devotional service. But then we have to understand that whatever service we're doing, when we're doing that service, when the mind and senses are engaged with the idea of trying to satisfy the Lord by the offering of that service, then one is in the perfect condition. And by that practice, the mind ultimately becomes satisfied. Why? When Krishna is satisfied, then everyone becomes satisfied. So engaging the mind in devotional service is the means for satisfaction. Prabhupada also says there's another way to become satisfied, and that is to meditate very carefully or remember the instructions of the spiritual master. This is very important. In our day-to-day activities, in our interaction with all aspects of our devotional life, remember what the instructions of the spiritual master is in application to that service. Don't become so spontaneous. Rather, become very thoughtful in expressing how best to execute our devotional service by meditating on the instructions of the spiritual master. And Prabhupada said there's a third way. He gives three ways on how one can make the mind satisfied. The last one is to work for the welfare of others. He gives that the third. That one who is concerned about the needs of others then one uses that mind and starts to forget or takes one's mind off one's own problems and makes the concerns of others their life. Compassion, or they did a survey. Now, I take it on the material platform, not on the spiritual platform. They did a survey in the material world just to find out who are the most happiest people in the world. They did it in America many years ago. And the conclusion was that the most happiest people materially, supposedly using that, you know, paradigm to give an understanding, is that they have two characteristics. They're busy and they're helping others. They're using their time and they're helping others. And sometimes you meet people like that in the material world. They're finding some satisfaction by doing, living for the benefit of others. Of course, ultimately, because it's material, it doesn't bring any real results, and it just accumulates, it just compounds the problem. But it's the nature of the soul to want to serve and for to serve for the welfare. So as we serve Krishna and Krishna's devotees, then the mind becomes satisfied. And when others become, what we say, satisfied or happy by our service, we feel satisfied. Yes? The greatest happiness in devotional service is to see others happy in devotional service. That is the process of bhakti. When one sees others benefiting in by devotion, and if I do some service where others are happy or make some advancement or anything that benefits their spiritual life, there's a sense of satisfaction that comes with that that is more satisfying than even if one is directly feeling some pleasure. It's like the other day, one very wonderful brahmachari came up to me and he said, I gave a lecture a couple years ago in South India. He said, Maharaj, you said one thing that I really liked and it changed my whole devotional service. I don't want to mention the person's name, but just because it might embarrass him. But when I heard that, he said it from the core of his heart. He said, thank you very much. And I just said some simple practical thing on how to execute your service that may help, you know, increase the quality of your chanting like that. And he took it seriously and applied it to his devotionals. And when he said, thank you, it was the greatest. I felt so much pleased. I felt like, wow, thank you, Krishna, that this is actually, you know, the satisfaction, to find that happiness. So by using the mind in devotional service and in such a way that the mind is engaged nicely to serve others and to serve the Lord. Otherwise, when the mind is not, it's always complaining, this is not right, she's not right, he's not right, where is this, why is the doll burnt, and so many things. It's always complaining about something, right? Right? When people get together in the world, they always say, well, they always talk about what's not right, right? He's not right, she's not right, this is not right. If this shoulda, coulda, woulda. You know, you ever heard that? It should have been like this, it could have been like this, and it would have been like this, and then it would have been better, yes. Right? It's called the shoulda, coulda, woulda philosophy. It's too late, don't worry about it. You know, even if it was, it wouldn't really satisfy your mental concoctions anyway. That's the nature of the material world. It gives us this idea that we're in the control, and if we just somehow miss being in control for a little while, it's just like we just have to get back in control again. Hare Krishna. So keep the mind nicely engaged in devotional service. And Prabhupada writes in one very interesting statement. He gives so many ways how to control the mind, but in one verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the story of Judd Bart and King Rahugana. And in the last purport in the particular chapter, Prabhupada said, and there's another way to control the mind. He's called neglect. Neglect. Don't listen to it. Of course, we have to make a distinction between listening to it and not listening to it according to the instructions of the spiritual master. But a lot of times the mind will immediately, due to its conditioned nature and desire to find happiness, will try to push the living entity to think or say or act in such a way. So one has to be very aware of that. And I remember Radhanath Maharaj gave a class one time speaking about this principle of the nature of the mind. He says the mind is like a computer, a gigantic computer. And what you see on the screen is just one feature of how many gigabytes you have in your mind. I don't know. It's like so much information. How many lifetimes, millions and billions of lifetimes of stored information that's there that can come to the surface if you just hit the wrong button. Uh-oh. Let me get out of that and get to another website. I don't like that one, you know. It's like, you know, it's pretty, you never know what's going to pop up, you know. Is that me? Can't be me. It is. But that part of you don't want. And that simply is, you know, the feature of our conditioned nature. So, and that is gradually destroyed through the process of bhakti. As one purifies their consciousness by chanting the holy names of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Cheto Dharpadam Marjanam. The dirt from the mind gradually is being destroyed, and gradually the pure, true nature of the living entity in its relationship with Krishna, more or less, is coming to the surface of one's existence. And that takes practice, because you have to understand one thing, that this material energy is like a contaminating disease. And although we're practicing devotional service, we have to be very careful, because in association with the material energy, one can again become contaminated by this energy. Prabhupada said it's like, you know, being in a hospital full of sick people. You know, you have to take precautions. If you think, you know, I'm an island in myself, no. This material energy, the three modes of material energy, are like, you know, waves of, you know, contamination that is constantly in association with our consciousness. So therefore, one has to take good precautions. One has to have good medicine. Baba al-Saudi. What is that medicine? Chanting of the holy names of the Lord and association with those who are fixed in Krishna consciousness. This is a very important principle emphasized by Srila Prabhupada Bhakti Siddhanta. Take the association of Vaishnavas. Hear from them, engage in devotional service, chant the holy names of the Lord, purify one's consciousness, and ultimately attain the perfection of life, pure love of God. Prema Pumartha Maham. There is no second goal in this Krishna consciousness movement. Second goal means to compromise. Second goal means to come back in this material world again to try to achieve, you know, some kind of happiness. The goal of this Krishna consciousness movement, Prabhupada said, is to know God and to love God. That is the goal. And through this process of Harinam Sankirtan, this is the powerful force that brings about quick removal of all the material contamination and brings one to the pure consciousness. Chanting the holy names of the Lord, kirtan, japa, in association with devotees, taking nice Krishna prasadam, spiritual foods to purify the consciousness, hearing the discourses on philosophy, engaging in some practical devotional life. Taktuateham purnam janma naiti mam eti sorjuna. Then Prabhupada said, at the end of life, back home, back to Godhead, which is the goal of life. Okay, I'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Do we have time for questions? Are there any questions? Yes, Mother Lakshmi Moni?
Yes.
Do you have the microphone with you? Do we have a microphone?
Yes.
It's not working.
Anyway, whatever. Okay, so I only have one question. My question is, what is it that you said that person appreciated so much that was beneficial for their devotional service?
It's what you're doing every day. I noticed that because when we were in camp together, I noticed you were doing it. Getting up early and chanting their rounds. getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning. You're doing that, right? Yes, she's been doing that for I don't know how long. When we were in Slovenia together, what was it, this year, in August.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you were up ahead of everybody, chanting your rounds. And so, because I was mentioning how in the old days of our brahmachari life, we had no japa period. Mangal Arati was at 4:30, and Tulsi Puja, Guru Puja, class, prasadam, and work. All that was part of the morning program, so there was no break after breakfast. You had to go out to work. So when did you chant your japa? Before Mangal Arati. And that means you had to get up 2:30, like that, to get your have enough time for japa. So those were getting up at 3, they were like, ugh. Those were getting up at 3:30, they were like really shaky in their spiritual life. So it was recommended to get up early. Yes, yes. If you were getting up at 3:30, obviously you weren't going to last long. Because yeah, it was an indication you were falling deeply into Maya. 3 o'clock was also considered not the best, but 2:30 was the average time people were getting up, and some were getting up at 2. So that's the way it was. I mean, it was like, you know, there was practically no choice. There wasn't any choice. So this devotee, when I spoke a little bit about our days in Brahmacharya, he liked that, and he adopted that as his part of his program, like that, so, which you're doing. Thank you. Thank you very much. Anyone else? Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You can stand up and speak nice and loudly. Yeah. Anger is the basis of
ignorance. Ignorance, bridge to ignorance, and it is the form of passion.
Yes.
And means you told that it is very difficult to control the mind, and we need to chant and hear and read Prabhupada books for controlling it. That will help us to control anger in a long-term manner. What I feel about it. So, what is the means? Since my anger is really volcanic erective, so I just wanted to know how to control it on a short-term basis.
Bhagavad Gita explains that anger, the younger brother of anger, anger is the younger brother of desire. So material desire, when unfulfilled, brings about anger. Dayato vishayam pumsam. Sangat sanjayate, sangat sanjayate kama, kama krodha bijayate, krodha bhavati samoham, samoham shriti vibramam, shriti brahmsa mudirasa, budinasa panashyati. Panashyati means fall down. So by contemplating sense objects, one develops lust. From lust, anger. From anger, delusion. From delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. When intelligence is lost, one again is back in the material energy. So it comes by contemplating the objects of the senses. And then we cannot fulfill that happiness by this contemplation or even experiencing it. And we become dissatisfied. We become angry. We expect something to happen. It doesn't happen. Or something happens that we don't like. We become angry. We may not experience gross physical, outward anger. But inside, there's a kind of anger that's building up subtly, which is part of not fulfilling that desire. So there's that subtle type of anger. And when it reaches various proportions due to the nature of our attachment, the more the attachment is there, the greater the frustration when not fulfilled. Then anger comes. So purify one's desires, change material desires to spiritual desires. And then we can gradually dissipate this anger. Another way to get rid of anger, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, is to learn how to forgive. To learn how to forgive. If someone does something you don't like and you become angry, just practice forgiveness. And you can put yourself in the position that if I did something wrong, maybe someone would like to forgive me also. If I caused someone some... You're happy if you do something wrong. You're happy if someone forgives you for making a mistake like that. So in the same way, we can learn how to forgive. This dissipates that force of anger. Practice forgiveness. Practice purification of the heart when we get rid of material desires. And another way is that you feel like you're getting angry, just count to 10 before you say anything. The practical way. That also helps. Questions? Let's see. Yes, Rishabhanu Prabhu?
Maharaj, you said in the very beginning of your class that ignorance is compounded by more and more material achievements. Now, one who is on the spiritual path also, he also, has many, many achievements. He does achievements either in the material plane or in the spiritual plane. So, what kind of caution such a person should exercise not to be swayed by achievements?
By spiritual success, apparently?
Apparent spiritual success.
What are some of the indications of these things? Giving someone receives some praise, some honor, some position, some facility. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that this is a cause of fall down. He calls it Ranga Tarangini, is that to accept the externals as being the indications of one's spiritual advancement. Because I'm getting praise, or because I have facility, or I have money, or I have followers, that means I'm advanced. I'm advanced. The real advancement is purification of the heart. As the heart becomes purified, then one is making advancement accordingly. So to see that these external things could come by way of the mercy of the Lord, to be used in the service of the Lord, are not necessarily indications of advancement. They may be. But if we accept that as the sole indicator, then, although we may be in a very contaminated situation, still, because we have all these other things around us, we're thinking, I'm okay. I'm okay. And that happens within our society also, that one who may have a good position, but somehow maybe slips from the process and still is seeing their success and by what people are saying about them, or how many disciples, or how much facility they have, or how much influence they have in their devotional service, but maybe they're not chanting their rounds, maybe they're not chanting, maybe they're chanting offensively, they're not following. And somehow or other, although the internal purification is stopped for some reason, the external things are still there, and one's thinking, I'm all right. I'm okay. And then what happens? And sooner or later, you wake up one day, and it's not the same anymore. So one has to guard against that by following the process carefully. One should take association with devotees who are peers. If we take association with devotees that are, you know, always in a position to see us as superior or more advanced, that may not be enough. We should associate with peers or those who are more advanced. By associating with those who are more advanced or those who are our peers, they help us to understand, keep us on track like that. So that type of association is very helpful, to associate with advanced devotees, to associate with those who are, you know, practicing. Rana Muni said, Dhruva Maharaj, I'm sorry, Narada Muni gives that principle that there are those who are equal, those who are more advanced, and those who are lesser. For those who are more advanced, we hear from them, we serve them. Those who are equal, we make friends, and those who are in a lesser position, we show compassion and raise them up. And that is that's how a devotee sees. But sometimes we're afraid to associate with more advanced devotees because they show us where we're at, you know? And that kind of hurts sometimes. It's like having a mirror put in front of you, you know? Yeah. Oh, I thought I was all right. No, I'm not. You can see. So that's the benefit of associating with those who are more advanced. They act like a mirror in our own spiritual life, you know? And if we're honest, we'll accept that as an opportunity to grow. So be careful not to accept the externals as simply indications of one's spiritual growth. It's the purification of the heart. So how do we understand how we're making progress? By how eagerly we are to hear, to chant, to serve, to surrender. Our eagerness in the process is an indication of that we're moving in the right direction.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you. Yes? Yeah. Nice and loud. Oh, here comes the mic. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, my question is that when we are engaged with devotional service, a hidden expectation is engaged also with that service, because we...
Our hidden...
Expectations.
Hidden our expectations.
Expectations. Because we, when we are doing some services, we are feeling that after doing these services, I will go to Godhead and like that. So many expectations is coming with us. Then how we can neglect these expectations, Prabhuji?
Krishna says in Gita, you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activity, and never be attached to not doing your duty. So do your service for the sake of pleasing the Lord, pleasing the devotees, engage in your devotional service, and leave it up to Krishna. I leave it up to Krishna to fulfill your expectations or not to fulfill them. Having expectations means if they're not fulfilled, then you may be disappointed. Or you may, your expectations may be fulfilled, but not right away. Prabhupada used to say, first desire, no, first deserve and then desire. I want to be a big preacher. Well, first deserve to be one. Then you can be. In other words, make your desires in accordance to, you know, how best you can serve. And have faith. We have to have faith that by engaging in devotional service, this is the most auspicious thing that we can do. That Krishna will, through his various energies, will give us exactly what we need. Therefore, Rupa Goswami says, enthusiasm, determination, patience. So we may have expectations, but be patient. And if they're not fulfilled, that means you didn't need them. What is the happiness we get in devotional service? That we can please the Lord. When the Lord is pleased, then all your expectations are fulfilled. You water the root of the tree, the branches, the twigs, everything connected with the root gets the benefit of the watering process. So whatever desires or expectations we have, forget about them. And just try to satisfy the Lord. And then try to engage in devotional service. Si guru charanerati, e seyuta mugati, e prasade purve sarvaas. By attachment to the lotus feet of the spiritual master, all of one's desires are automatically fulfilled. So all your desires and expectations beyond your even imagination will be fulfilled by engaging in devotional service. If you have that faith, then you will see how Krishna takes care of his devotees. And if there's something that's not fulfilled, it'll be fulfilled by giving you something better. Prabhupada said, two ways to fulfill the desire. You get what you want, or you get something better and you forget the other thing. And that's usually the best way, because Krishna consciousness is the higher taste. It's the higher taste. So what is your expectation? You want to go back home, back to Godhead? That's your expectation? Not that one. You want what? Become a good devotee. How to become a good devotee? Just serve Krishna. Nicely. And practice the qualities that are conducive to becoming a devotee. Cultivate humility, tolerance, patience, pridelessness. Those qualities that are recommended for the execution of devotional service. Like that. Krishna doesn't need our devotional service. But he's happy when we serve him with devotion. That's all. Yes, you had a question? Nice and loud. You have to speak loudly or get the mic. Yes. Okay. I have expectations too.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you said that there is nothing a situation called happiness or distress. It is just a mind concoction.
The idea of this is good and this is bad is all mental concoction.
I sometimes feel that what I am practicing, I am feeling happiness in this, but the people who are outside, they think that it is just wastage of time.
Yeah.
Now it's not a situation that we are feeling happiness and they are feeling distress in this situation. So I sometimes feel that it is also concoction of mind, and I am being hammered that by doing this you will be getting happiness, and now, that's why I am feeling happiness. And how to overcome this feeling, and how to respond to those who say me this, that you are just feeling because you are said that you will be getting happiness.
Whether you believe it or they believe it, it doesn't matter. The scriptures say, susukam kartam avyayam, that this platform of bhakti is the highest form of happiness. directly. You get it. So we can accept that's coming from Krishna. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says this is the highest happiness. Susukam. Sukam means happy, but susukam, great happiness. It's the highest form of happiness. Anandam buddhi vardhanam. It's an ocean of unlimited happiness. So you don't have to hope and that it's right. It is right. You just have to continue to practice the devotional service. And, you know, sometimes I tell devotees, you know, sometimes devotees are not happy, complaining about something. I say, you just stop your practice for a day or so and you'll realize how much mercy you're actually getting. So we don't actually see how much, what is the difference between the happiness we're getting and the happiness we used to get, you know, because we still have some attachments and material desires. We focus on that. We forget about all the mercy and happiness that's coming by way of our devotional life. So yes, it's there. Chant and be happy. Take prasadam. Do you like to take prasadam? Is it happy? Yes, very nice. So there's so many forms of happiness in Krishna consciousness, and it's natural. And we don't have to, you know, kind of like think, well, yes, this is happy, but I'm not feeling it yet. It's there. It's the mind, that's all. We have to come to what is called at least the intelligent platform. There's the sensual platform, there's the mental platform, there's the intelligent platform. Intelligent platform means I act on the basis of knowledge. I know what's right and I do it. And Prabhupada said, in due course of time, and the purification of the heart, and you'll see, you'll experience the happiness. As he uses the example of the jaundice patient who has jaundice, takes sugarcane as the cure, recommended cure, but because sugarcane is sweet, and a jaundice person cannot taste anything that's sweet, as the way it is, he's thinking this sugarcane is bitter. But another person's taking the same sugarcane saying, no, it's so sweet. So what's the difference? That the disease. So what is our disease? Material consciousness or material desires. So as that disease becomes lessened, then the happiness of Krishna consciousness becomes more a part of our life, you know. So it's there. Just stay with it. Steadiness is a feature that attracts the mercy of the Lord. Remain steady in our devotional service. Like that. Okay. One more question. Any ladies have a question? Yes. Mataji. Microphone.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah. I've been going to distribute books, and I truly want to connect people to Srila Prabhupada. I truly want to connect them to Krishna Bhagwan, and, you know, by giving them Krishna Bhagwan. And I went to these few Muslim people, the very staunch Muslims. And before I speak, I pray to Panchatattva, I pray to Srila Prabhupada that please speak through me and touch their hearts. So I told them, I said, you know, whether it's the Holy Bible or the Quran or the Bhagavad Gita, they sum up to the basic that we're not the body and the soul. And I explained to them, you know, our philosophy. And they were very happy with whatever I had to say, and they said, yeah, okay, please give me 100 Bhagavad Gita. And another one also said, yeah, give me 75. So my question to you is that, you know, we should not speak what we do not know. And I said to them that, you know, whether it's the Bhagavad Gita or the Holy Quran or the Bible, the basis is the same. So, you know, you'll be connecting people to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by giving this great Gita Dan. So I don't know whether I spoke the right thing or...
You were speaking on the basis of the principle that God is one, right? And religion is one. And that God is not Hindu, God is not Muslim, God is not Christian, God is transcendent to all these designations, right? That's the way you can speak to those of other faiths, like that. That's the best way. Because then you're not trying to push your own ideas upon them, you're trying to reinforce their own spirituality by reminding them of some principles that are the basis of all religions like that. That's nice. That's the best way to bring about communication and interaction in our dealings with others. We don't try to change others. We try to, if we come in contact with others who are fixed in their own practice, then we should just try, if there's some need, to reinforce their own practice like that. That's nice. Thank you. You're doing nice service. Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.